Hi, this is Jacqueline Sova, and I'm so excited to share a piece of Torah with you that comes both from this week's Parsha and deals with the 3 weeks in which we find ourselves. When you open up this week's Parsha, it's immediately talking about lots and lots of promises. What promises hold, what promises don't take effect. And one of the specific topics that it talks about is if a woman makes a promise, what happens? And it tells us that the husband then has an opportunity. If the wife makes a promise, the husband can then either remain silent and her promise takes hold, or he can say something. He can stop the promise and therefore make sure it doesn't take effect. There are two words, though, when the husband is, what it's talking about, it says, im hacharish yacharish la, if he remains silent. And when you're reading this, you immediately get very excited because these two words sound awfully familiar. We've seen these two words before back to back, im hacharish chacharishi, and of course, that is in Megillas Esther. When Mordechai turns to Esther and says, im hacharish chacharishi, you cannot remain silent, right? If you remain silent, and these are very few places in Tanakh are these two words, im hacharish yacharish la, in our parsha, and im hacharish tacharishi, it's one more time in Iyov, I believe those are the three times, if I'm not mistaken. And we're trying to, what is the significance of this silence? And the Gemara tells us an idea that many of you are familiar with, that shtika kehoda'a, when you remain silent, it says if you agree. So the husband's silence seems to imply that he agrees with his wife's taking this promise. And what Mordechai is telling Esther is, Esther, if you remain silent while Haman is making his decree, it's as if you agree with Haman. You cannot remain silent now. And I believe that if you think carefully about one of the most well-known stories that deal with Charban, I think silence plays a tremendous part. There's a well-known story that many of us are familiar with called Kamsa Ubar Kamsa. Kamsa Ubar Kamsa, just to review the basics of the story, is that there was a wealthy person making a party who was very close with his friends named Kamsa. And he did not have a good relationship with someone whose name was Bar Kamsa. And unfortunately, and by mistake, the invitation gets to Bar Kamsa. Now, if you're Bar Kamsa, you might imagine that this is an attempt for repair, right? This is an attempt to create shalom. And he shows up to the party. And of course, within a few moments, it's very clear that as soon as the host recognizes Bar Kamsa there, that this was not the plan. And he is clear that he's going to make it very clear that I do not want you here. And Bar Kamsa, realizing that there's so many prestigious people and dignitaries and Rabbanim, he doesn't want to be embarrassed. And so he starts to basically plead and beg, can you not embarrass me in front of all these people? And he says, I'll pay even for my meal. I'll pay for half the party. Please just don't embarrass me. And of course, as we know, the host does in fact embarrass him and throws him out in front of everybody. And what does Bar Kamsa do? Bar Kamsa goes out and he goes straight to the Romans and creates this conspiracy theory that the Jews are planning a rebellion. And this is like the quintessential story in the Gemara telling us what's been going on leading up to the Chorban. But there's two parts of the story that we have to explain the significance of. Number one is the Gemara says very, very clearly that when Bar Kamsa was leaving the party, he looked over and noticed that there was a particular group that was silent, and their silence was extraordinarily devastating to him. And those were the Rabbanim. The fact that people can sit there, such chashav, illustrious Rabbanim, who should be standing up for my dignity, stayed silent. Shtika kehoda'a, how can you remain silent when there's a Jew versus Jew? But there's one more person in our story that seems to go under the radar, and that's who I want to talk about. The Gemara says very explicitly, Kamsa Ubar, Kamsa Charv Yushalayim, it's because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Now, if we were to think about our main characters of the story, it's certainly the host, it's certainly Bar Kamsa, we might even add the Rabbanim into that, but certainly I can say for sure that the person who has nothing to do with this story seemingly is Kamsa. Kamsa never got an invitation. Kamsa is at home, maybe reading his Mishpacha magazine while everybody else is at this party. And you kind of wonder and ask yourself, why is he guilty? Why is he part of this story? Okay, that was the mix-up. So tell me, host and Bar Kamsa destroyed Yerushalayim. But why are you telling me Kamsa Ubar Kamsa destroyed Yerushalayim? And so I saw an idea this year brought down in Rav Emanuel Bernstein's new book that I thought was so profound and so beautiful. He says, who is Kamsa and who is Bar Kamsa? Well, we know that the Lashon of Bar, like Bar Mitzvah, is Ben, the son of. And really, there is a much closer relationship between Kamsa and Bar Kamsa than we may have thought. It's not just, you know, Mr. Fried and Mr. Friedman and the invitations got mixed up. This is actually a father and a son. Kamsa is the father, Bar Kamsa is his son. And now the story seems to shift a little bit, because what we're dealing with here is we're dealing with a very good friend of Kamsa and his son, who clearly had a very bad relationship way before this party began. And says Rav Emanuel Bernstein that we now have to pause and ask ourselves, Kamsa might not be held responsible for what happened at the party. He never got the invitation. He never was there. But perhaps it's on Kamsa, who remains silent for all these months, perhaps even all these years, where the tension has been growing and brewing, and the division and the divisiveness grew even stronger, and the wedge between them became even more intense. That, you know, it's very difficult for us to relate to the host, to embarrass someone so egregiously in public. It's also hard for us to relate to Bar Kamsa, who would go to the Romans and tell on a Jew and make up such an intense lie. But many of us might be able to relate to the Kamsa in the story, who has people in our lives that we're very close with who don't have such amazing shalom between them. And we feel like it's not my place to get involved, right? I can't change them anyways. And I believe what the Gemara is telling you, and these are the words in this week's Parsha, HaCharish YaCharish. Silence is a way of communicating something. You are communicating. You know, you're trying to step away, but you're not. And when your silence is essentially saying, this doesn't matter to me. And therefore, Kamsa is very much held responsible for the destruction of Yerushalayim, not because of what happened at the party, but because we should have avoided the party to begin with. But Kamsa should, by the time the party happened, right, Kamsa should have tried to make amends between them. Now, it is not in his control to make shalom. People are people, and people are complicated, but it's under your influence, right? They're not in your control, but certainly you can try to influence shalom here. And what's clear is the Gemara is testifying and saying that Kamsa did not try to make that rectification. And so, this concept of shtika kahoda, are remaining silent, when we see so much happening in Klal Yisrael, between Jew versus Jew, between people's personal tzaros, between people that we love, and realizing that shtika kahoda, remaining silent, is essentially saying that it's not my problem. I'm okay with it. And whether that means trying to create shalom between people in our lives, again, in a very dignified, respectful way, but trying to just influence repair, not chas v'shalom, it's not our control. We can't control people, but we can try to influence repair. Or if we see Jew versus Jew and what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, it's so painful. I can't control that, but perhaps my tefillos can influence it, and I don't have to remain silent watching it on the sides. But I could say, Hashem, enough. I care too much. And so while we read this week's parasha and we recognize there's just one last powerful thing, is that if you look right around those psukim, you will notice there is the word pur, yafirenu. The promise will be annulled. And yafirenu, of course, is milashon pur purim. That is the purim story, the ultimate annulment. And I believe what the Chumash is maybe perhaps alluding to is if we do not remain silent, then we could have the ultimate annulment of this horrific decree that's been for too many generations, and Amir Tashem, let's stand up and show the Ribbono Shel Olam, even if just in our tefillos, right? And we don't actually say something to somebody, but in our tefillos we say, Hashem, make shalom. Hashem, make this person feel better. Hashem, I'm not okay with what's going on in the world around me, and I'm stepping up and saying something. That Amir Tashem, may we be zochot to that other word right in this week's parsha, Yafirenu. May we see the ultimate annulment of the decree and be a Hashem Mashiach Bekarov Mamish.